plenty of decks don't get to draw three cards for one mana.
Well, I mean, all the good ones do.
Hi, I'm Jake.
And I'm Matt.
And we definitely haven't recorded this intro three times already.
Nope, but someone Jake keeps fucking it up.
So, yeah, I'm 0 for 2 on the last, between this podcast and last week's. So, apologies for not getting an episode out last week. Between the Valentine's holiday with our wives and me working a bunch of extra hours, it is pretty much exclusively my fault we didn't get an episode out. It's fair to call it as you see it. It was Matt's fault when his dad died. It was my fault when I was kind of busy at work. Those things are comparable, right?
Yeah, they're totally, totally similar circumstances there.
So we are pretty deep into a conversation already, and we just started recording about whether or not when companies remake games, which they quite often do these days, they're revamping and re-releasing games, whether or not they should redesign it. Should we go in and recreate the wheel? Should we take, you know, Final Fantasy, whatever, the one that's coming out soon, and go, should we just, you know, rebuild this game, update the graphics, update the engine, and re-release it? Or should we make a new game for people to enjoy with kind of the same skin? Matt and I seem to be pretty consistently of the consensus that, like, if a game was, like, if it was a blockbuster the first time, if it was a fucking smash, probably re-release it. Like, keep it, like, you don't have to reinvent the wheel to make a successful game. And I cut Matt off mid-thought, so what were you were talking about, like, turn-based combat and how...
Yeah, so the game we were talking about specifically was Final Fantasy VII. For anybody paying attention, and those who may not be paying attention, the Final Fantasy VII second part of the remake comes out in 9 days. It releases for PlayStation 5 on Leap Day, so it's February 29th. and we were talking about that, and I was discussing giving Jake my opinions on the first part of the remake. It's literally called Final Fantasy VII Remake. The second part is called Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And then I guess the third one's going to be like Regurgitation or something. I don't know. but in the they have overhauled the combat. And I'm of the opinion that while I understand the impulse to do so, I don't think it was necessary. I do think there's a market for turn-based games. Final Fantasy VII, out of all the Final Fantasies, is the most popular one, and I think this game would have been popular whether they updated the combat or not. people still play it. I mean, I was going through TikTok because, like, this was last week, or maybe it was yesterday, not today. I had to fucking work all day today, Jake. It was ridiculous. But we can get to that later. And by work, I mean stand around and watch a technician work, because I don't know how to do anything.
That sounds rough.
So I'm scrolling through TikTok, and I keep seeing motherfuckers doing, like, Final Fantasy VII marathons and stuff like that. Like, Final Fantasy VII, within gaming culture at large, is a very well-known thing. Like, mm-hmm. You don't have to, and I really want to stress have to on this. I get the fact that, like, you've already made the game once, so, like, if you're going to tell the story, like, fuck around with some stuff, experiment, try a new style, sure, let it rip. But you don't have to.
Mm-mm.
And I really enjoy turn-based combat. I don't dislike the combat in the Final Fantasy VII Remake, but I don't love it either. To me, when you have combat like that, and Jake, I don't know if you've ever watched it. I know you haven't played it, but I don't know if you've ever watched it, or maybe you watched Sarah play it a little bit.
Oh, is it the one you got her?
Yeah, that's the one I got her.
Okay, so I've watched a little bit, but that was years ago, so I don't remember much of it.
Yeah, the problem I have with stuff like that is it makes boss fights really fun, and it makes all the other fighting you do very tedious.
Mm-hmm.
Because it tries to turn every fight into this grand epic thing, when in reality, most fights aren't. So, like, just because I'm just beating up a couple soldiers, we don't have to do these, like, crazy insane moves. I don't want to have to hit them 1,400 times and, like, combo off and, like, all that kind of shit. No, I want to attack a couple times, use some spells, heal, whatever, because it's, you know, these are the lowy dudes that I'm just, like, they're here for me to trounce or to grind on, right?
Yep.
Or to give me some practice. That is one of the biggest problems I have with that kind of combat. Is like, mm-hmm. It's really good for boss fights, and it's just atrocious for your random battles, because you're just like, it makes me not want to fight them. And if that's what's happening there, then I'd rather them just not be there at all.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, once I don't want to do it anymore,
what are we, like, those parts of the game should just be cut out. Any part of the game where it's like, I don't really want to do this. Yep, just remove it.
Right. And I've never felt that way about Final Fantasy VII, like the original. There's random battles in it. So as you're moving across the maps, you'll just get into a battle. You go to a different screen. Everybody lines up on their side. It's got what I was explaining to Jake is the ATB, the active turn or active time battle. So basically you have a gauge that fills up based on your character's speed attribute. Mm-hmm. And the more speed you have, the faster it fills up. When it fills up, you can go. So it's not strictly speaking turn-based like the original Final Fantasies where it'd be like, you know, your side goes and their side goes. Or like more modern elements where they have like a speed stat and that determines the turn order, which mm-hmm. would be like your initiative in D&D. That's got, you know, so it's got a tiny bit in there, but it's definitely not an action game. But it's enough to kind of keep you going. And it makes your stats matter a little bit more. At least makes them feel like they matter a little bit more. And I will say, the big complaint about turn-based combat is a lot of people find it very easy. And to be fair, it is easier than action-based combat because you mm-hmm. just take, even if you were just to look at the metrics of what it requires, action-based combat can require many of the tactics of turn-based, but it also requires twitch skills, like fast reflexes and shit. Like,
yeah.
There's just another element on top of it. I am perfectly fine foregoing the twitch element. I don't need my reflexes tested. I'm pushing 40. I don't care. Like, sure, dude, 15-year-olds are faster than me. I fucking get it. That's fine. B, one of the things you can do is if you take out the reflex element, you can make the tactical elements much deeper and much more complicated because you don't, like, without getting into basically Dark Souls territory, you know what I mean? Because, like, at some point, you're going to hit this point where, like, you have to have split-second reflexes and be using the exact right thing at the exact right time. And, like, you're getting into very difficult territory.
Mm-hmm.
And primarily JRPGs are, like, middle-of-the-road difficulty because the primary purpose of them is to tell a story, not to test your reflexes.
Yep.
And to be fair, from what I understand, the Final Fantasy VII Remake combat, I've played it. I never had any issues with it as far as, like, difficulty goes. It just felt a little tedious. Like, the way it worked is you'd get into a battle and you effectively had an arena. You could move freely throughout and you could mm-hmm. switch between any of your characters. But the way you could only basically attack and do, like, basic attacks, very simple combos, like XXX, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that would build up a charge. And when that charge was charged, you could use it to do like an actual, like a strong attack, like a limit break or cast a spell or use an item, something like that. And mm-hmm. what that meant was there was a hell of a lot of button mashing. Because yep. you're just like, I just got to sit here and, because like, in order to make that work, your basic attacks just don't do any damage. And it's just like, well, then why am I doing them?
Yep.
Like, this thing has 10,000 health. My attacks hit for 10 damage, and I have to attack him 20 times in order to do an actual attack that will actually hurt him. You know what I mean? It's just like, I'd literally rather just watch a fucking bar fill up.
Like, that sounds fun. Yeah, no, that sounds like a great, enjoyable way to play the game.
Right, and like, to me, I would rather just have the bar fill up and add complexity at the tactical and strategic level than just have to just fucking spam X.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it didn't ruin the game for me, but what ruined the Final Fantasy VII Remake for me was the radical shifts in not only tone but the story and plot overall. Mm-hmm. And we don't have to go on a deep dive on that. If you're interested in looking up the differences, I'm sure there's, to be fair, I didn't even finish it. Like, they made some changes and I was like, wow, this has gotten really dumb. And then they kept changing shit and I'm like, and it's not even the fact that stuff changed and was different. Like, that in and of itself isn't what pissed me off. It's they made it actively worse. There were some changes mm-hmm. I really liked. There were some characters they fleshed out. And then they just added sequences of, like, them getting chased down the street on this dude. Like, look this up if anybody's interested and you haven't played it. This dude on a fucking motorcycle. And they're doing, like, this stupid anime shit where, like, he's taking his motorcycle and doing like flips and shit with it down the road and like flinging it and like just this like super crazy over the top shit. I'm like, yep. That is not anything like what the first one was like. And I hate it, Like, I fucking hate it.
Yep.
It's really stupid.
It wasn't like that on purpose.
Right. And so, like, I got a couple of hours past that, and I was just like, I am just not enjoying this. So, and how many times have I said it? When I stop enjoying your game, I'll give it a little bit to see if it comes back. If not, I'm just going to turn it off. Like,
yeah, that's,
I got better things to do than not enjoy a video game.
That's where I've gotten to. I'm busy enough that I just don't have the care to slog through your games. Like, I beat Sekiro literally because I had nothing better to do.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee if I played Sekiro today, I mean, actually, it just happened. So people on Discord will know that this is a tangent from talking about new games or remakes. But I bought Dark Souls 2 because it was on sale, and I was like, oh, I've heard good things about it. It looks fun, blah, blah, blah. I played it for 2 hours, and I was like, this isn't fun. I'm not enjoying it, and I refunded it.
Yep.
Because, like, I could slog through Dark Souls 2, and part of me thinks I should, because I should play all the Dark Souls, and I should have, but I just have a very finite amount of time in my life to play video games. I'm not going to spend them doing the equivalent of chores.
Right. And it's just like, well, you know what you do enjoy? Dark Souls 3. So how about if you've got the Dark Souls itch, just play the one you like.
Yep. So I uninstalled it and then it reinstalled Dark Souls 3, and I have been playing it since, and it was the best decision I made this week.
Yeah. So all that being said, I fully plan on playing the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I will continue. When people remake games that I like, my games that I love, I'll buy them. Mm-hmm. Even if I had no intention of ever playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, I'm going to buy it. The game needs to be a success so that maybe Square Enix will remake Final Fantasy VIII or Final Fantasy Tactics.
We've talked about that, where, like, if you think remaking games is good, you need to buy all the games they remake so that they keep remaking the game you want. Or they'll keep maybe getting to the game you want, because, you know, if they were to remake Toy Story and none of us went and watched it because it sucked, they would hopefully stop remaking Toy Stories.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, at least in my opinion, that's what happened with Toy Story 4. Toy Story 4 fucking sucked. Like, it was just bad. And that was really weird, because, like, Toy Story 1, 2, and 3 are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're some of my favorite movies, just period. Not even, like, animations or anything.
And I think the three was 3 the one where, I guess, spoiler alert, like, he gives the toys up to, like, the little girl?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. That was the last one I watched, and that was amazing. That movie was a fucking gut punch.
Yeah, and they did one more, because Toy Story 3 was wildly successful. Everyone was like, holy shit. Because, I mean, especially, I don't know about you, but I grew up, like, watching the Toy Stories. Like, I saw the first one in theaters as a kid, and like I basically followed the same fucking timeline they did, not like one-to-one, but like when he's fucking, like when all the toys are there and they're about to go into the fucking incinerator and shit, I don't know anybody who could watch that and not just be like like, you know, you're fucking off the edge of your seat, and you know they're not gonna fucking roast these toys. But, like, well, they sold it really fucking well.
Well, I mean, when you're a kid, you might not. That's because that's exactly. I remember being a young kid, and, like, so the example I could draw, the comparison is, like, when you're reading the Dresden Files, like, Harry Dresden almost dies in every single book. And it's like, guy, this is Jim Butcher. This is book 5. There's 17 of these. I guarantee he's not going to eat it here.
Yeah, and they don't suddenly change halfway through to the Murphy Files, so we're probably good.
But when I was a kid, like, they always, like, I just didn't have, like, that, I didn't look forward, like, I didn't think about looking forward like that. And so, like, they might fucking die. Like, if I was reading the Dresden Files when I was younger, especially if you didn't tell me there were 17 of them, I would read them one at a time. But I'd be like, oh my god, is this when Harry is this the end? Is this the last one? Are we done now?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, as a kid, that stuff hit a lot harder, because fuck yeah, that could be the end. This could be how they do it. I didn't think of the idea of corporate greed and the fact that why would Disney ever kill off its best movie franchise ever?
Right. But, and to be fair, in a good movie, you're not going to be thinking about that anyways.
That's true. Like,
a really well-made movie will suck you in, and you're not mm-hmm. thinking about anything else except for what you're experiencing there. As far as, like, the remakes go, I love them. The only one, like, I don't plan on buying the Tomb Raider remake. They've remastered the first 3 Tomb Raiders. It's fine, but, like, I was never a huge Tomb Raider fan. Like, I played the first two, and I thoroughly enjoyed them, but they're not, like...
Tomb Raider never hooked me.
Yeah. They're mostly puzzle games.
Yeah, the more recent ones that were more basically action shooter games were a little more interesting, because I kind of like that style of gaming. But, I mean, even those, like, I played one of the... I can't remember which one it was, but it was one of the... When it came out, it was, like, a breathtakingly beautiful game. It was a Tomb Raider, and it was... I remember the big scene of it.
It might have just been Tomb Raider when they kind of rebooted it to the new style.
Maybe. The opening sequence was her, like, walking on a snowy mountain. And, like, she had very realistic footprints in the snow. At the time, looked phenomenal. I don't know how it looks now. But I ended up buying that, and I played it for, like, 5 hours. And it was just like, this... I just don't really want to play this anymore. So I quit playing it.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it's like talking about like remakes, like I come down to the firm opinion where it's like, if you're going to remake a game just because it was crazy popular, I don't think it should change that much. And like, so we talked about this, the idea that, what did we say before? Oh, so if you take a game that was crazy popular 15 years ago, 10 years ago, and you just remake it today, well, realistically, you're probably going to sell it to the vast majority of the people that it was crazy popular with then. Because they're going to want to play it again. You're going to sell it to a bunch of the people that have never played it yet. And given that it was a really good game back then, it's probably going to be a relatively good game now. So most of them will enjoy it. And probably a relatively small percentage will be like, "Mer, I don't like this style of game." Or, "Mer, I wish they changed it." And you'll have a crazy successful game. Whereas if you take a game and you're like, "Hey, let's take," and I was thinking about, like, I want them to port Bloodborne, or like, if they did a remake of Bloodborne, that'd be amazing. Don't change it. And like, I'd be really upset if I heard they came out with a remake of Bloodborne, but it was a complete re-envisioning. And I understand now the outrage that came at the game that I remember playing and enjoyed was called DMC, which was the Devil May Cry remake. Having never really played Devil May Cry, the remake was great. It was a super fun game. It was action. It was a hack and slash. And it had loud, like, heavy metal music and demons, and it was awesome. And like, what happened was the people that loved it had never played the original for the most part. The people that hated it loved the original and were mad they redesigned it. And like, if all the elements were there and you guys just stayed a little more true to the source material, I probably still would have enjoyed it, because the core concept of the gameplay was great.
Well, that's the thing. Is like, you, especially with Devil May Cry, you just, if you want to do that, just don't call it the remake. Like, you don't have to, like, it's Devil May Cry 6, not Devil May Cry 1. Like, this is, like, if you're going to take the remake, and that's one of the things that I don't like about it, is it feels dishonest. Because, like, when you sit down to play the remake of Devil May Cry, the first one, and it's a totally different game, guess what? You're not playing the remake of Devil May Cry.
Yeah.
Just because you call it that doesn't mean it is that.
Yeah.
Just call it Devil May Cry 6.
It's a new game.
It's a new game.
Which is fine. It's fine to make new games, but yeah, don't call it. Well, that was... So here's actually a great comparison that just occurred to me. I don't know. Did you ever watch any of the anime live-action reboots that came out? There's a bunch of them now, but they came out like 10 years ago or probably 7 years ago.
Not that I know. I mean, I watched like the Dragon Ball Z movie, which is fucking like the worst movie ever.
Okay. So they did one for Death Note. They did a live-action Death Note.
I watched that. Yep.
Okay. So I remember watching that with some friends of mine. One of the friends I watched it with had not seen Death Note, and the other one had seen Death Note. And we walked away from that movie. It's a mediocre movie. Yep. But we decided, if you wanted to make a Death Note movie, it was fucking trash. It was just awful. It wasn't a Death Note movie. If you just wanted to make a movie around the premise of like, hey, there's a thing that exists called a Death Note, but it's just a movie, it wasn't that bad. It was okay. Yep.
That's how I felt too, because I don't think I've seen like every episode of Death Note, but I watched like the first couple seasons with my old roommate, and I enjoyed it. And then I was like, it just came out on Netflix one day, the movie of it, and I was like, well, that was a horrible Death Note translation. Like, you didn't do a good job capturing the spirit of the anime, but it wasn't a horrible movie. Like, I enjoyed what I watched. It was fine.
Yeah, if you completely separate out Death Note, which is funny because that's the name of the fucking show, or the movie. It's okay. It's not that bad at all. Yep. If you try to at all tie it back into Death Note, it's trash. It's a hot garbage. And so, like, that's how you should treat your remakes, is like, if you're remaking it, but you're going to fundamentally change a bunch of things about it, call it something different.
Right.
Because the problem is that really held, they probably really held that movie back, where, like, the movie could have been maybe semi-successful or semi-popular if everyone didn't go into it prepared to watch Death Note.
Right.
But we did.
That's one of the things that bugs me about one of the changes they made to the story of the Final Fantasy VII remake. Fundamentally, it's not even a remake, it's a sequel. The game references events that have already happened that happened in the original game. Like, gotcha. It's a sequel. It's like an alternate dimension sequel kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
That's not a fucking remake.
That's not a remake. That's not
what drives me nuts. It's literally called Remake. It's not like they went Final Fantasy VII. It's hilarious. In the title of the game is Final Fantasy VII Remake.
That's hilarious.
And it's just like, oh, so you're not just telling the same story, huh?
Yep, that's all I want.
You don't have to play very far before you can tell it's not the same story.
Yeah.
Aside from just like, because they fleshed some stuff out, and like I said, I'm fine with that. I don't have any issues with, like, because there's a few side characters that are fun side characters in the original, but they don't have a whole lot of depth because they, spoilers, they die pretty soon. Like, very soon. And they're cool, though. Because you start as a terrorist, eco-terrorists, blowing up power plants, and some of the other members of the group die. And it's kind of a big moment in the scene, or a big moment in the game, and it's a big part of a couple characters' character growth. And so it makes sense, like, when you're going to remake it, you're like, hey, I kind of want to flesh these characters out, because it's going to make it, when they die, it's going to make it hit a lot harder.
Yeah.
Because now we've actually spent some more time with them. These characters actually have a fully fleshed out personality. The girl, Jessie, has a huge crush on the main character, and she's flirting with him all the time. And, like, all that stuff's really cool. And it's the stuff where they go, oh, this should have happened, and we didn't want it to happen. So these literal black ghost spirit things show up and change events.
Oh, that's stupid.
It's really fucking weird.
It would like, that's one of those things, like, it would be better to just not, if you're gonna change it, which you shouldn't, just don't even acknowledge it. Just brush. Yeah. Don't make a bullshit reason. So here, so speaking of remakes, have you heard all the controversy? I mean, it's internet controversy coming out about the new Avatar movie. So they're making a new Avatar live action, which is funny because the first one was just comically bad. That was the joke about it, was it was atrocious.
Yep, that was going to be one of the other ones I mentioned.
Yes.
Alongside the Dragon Ball Z movie.
So they're redoing it again. And the problem, one of the problems with the movie, they've come out on Twitter saying a bunch of things and basically come out and saying, like, hey, I'll give some paraphrase examples. In the show, Sokka, who, don't forget, is a 13-year-old boy who grew up in a clan where men are meant to fight for and battle. And, like, he's pretty sexist, and he is. Like, in the beginning of the show, he has loved sexist opinions about, like, what a woman's job should be and women, you know, what women are caretakers and yada yada. They're not fighters. And it's a really important part of his character because throughout the show, traveling with his sister Katara, who becomes one of the most powerful waterbenders in history, and Toph, who literally invents metal bending and is one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, earthbender in history, he learns, and Suki, who's just a plain Jane fighter chick, hey, like, women are just as competent as I am, and plenty of them are way stronger than me. And they came out on Twitter, and they were like, he has a bunch of sexist opinions that we don't really want to carry forward into our show, so we're going to update him.
Right.
And it's like, that was the whole point of Sokka's character.
They talk about missing the fucking point.
That was Sokka's entire character. The only growth, The only growth that Sokka experiences in the show, for the most part, is coming to realize that just because you're a dude and have balls doesn't mean you're tougher than anybody. And there's a couple other instances. I don't remember if it's Toph or I think they did with Katara too, where they say, oh, like XYZ, Katara has some sexist opinions or she does some things and we don't agree with that, so we're going to remove them and change. And oh, the other one was, so they're talking about how in the show, Aang, so the show is constantly taking a detour, right? Aang is always, did you ever watch Avatar actually?
Nope.
Okay, so So Aang is the Avatar. He got told 100 years ago he's the Avatar, and it ruined his childhood. So as a 12-year-old boy would do, or something like that, he left. He ran away from home and got stuck in ice, blah, blah, blah. So during this, the show opens up with him realizing, like, hey, you have to go fight the Fire Lord and win the war for the world. And Aang, without saying it, is basically like, I'm 13. I don't want to do that. And so throughout the show, he's constantly getting detoured. I want to go do this. I want to go see that. Oh, hey, look at that shiny thing. And it's an important part of his character that towards the end of the show or the last season, he kind of buckles down and he's like, I have to do this. This is my duty. This is my destiny. It's what I'm responsible for. And that's the growth he experiences. And they came out and they said, hey, we don't think that viewers want to watch a real scatterbrained airhead Aang bouncing in different directions. So we're really going to focus him in and hone him in on defeating Fire Lord Ozai. And it's just like, hey, that was the point of Aang's character development. One of the reasons we loved the show so much is, like, it was cool to see, like, as kids, watching children characters, because they're very relatable, but get, like, they really developed them, and they grew, and they changed, and you got to see some real heartfelt moments, and they're just gutting a bunch of them, because they're like, we don't agree with those opinions, or those opinions haven't aged well, when, like, it wasn't okay for Sokka to be sexist in 2007. That's why he learned he shouldn't be sexist in 2009. So I like just that key example of, like, there's nothing wrong with remaking things, and there's kind of been this negative taste in Hollywood, I think, for the last probably 10 or 15 years, because being on the internet, I've seen, like, the general consensus of, like, why doesn't Hollywood make any new movies? It's always remakes and sequels and triples and blah blah blah. And I get that, but, like, I would argue that for the popular ones, there's nothing necessarily wrong with remaking it if you just do it well. They just can't. They have to keep changing it. They have to keep updating it to the modern sensibilities of what they think society should be. And, like, we liked the movie back then because it was a good movie.
Yep.
Like, if you just remade the Matrix, like, you just did the Matrix again and you redid it and made it good again and just updated it and made it look flashier and cooler, it'd probably be an amazing movie. Everyone would love it. But if you remade the Matrix and you made Neo, like, a super woke woman character that all she's worried about fighting is the patriarchy, not the aliens that are controlling humanity, you probably wouldn't sell many tickets.
Can confirm they've already done that.
Did they remake The Matrix?
They released a fourth one a couple years ago. Pure dog shit. And it also retcons it to where it's like, oh no, Neo wasn't the one. Neo and Trinity are the one. And, like, it's super self-referential. Like, it's just, like, 2 out of 10. Mm. It's okay. Fucking
there you go.
Pure, unadulterated dog shit.
So I had no idea about that. And, like, there you go. I, like,
yep. Called it.
Yeah. Shocking. I could see that on the horizon. So, like, so I get where you're coming from, where, like, if they remake Final Fantasy VII and they're sitting in an office and they're going, man, you know, people just don't like turn-based games as much as they used to, or it's kind of out of vogue, which we talked about. I marginally agree with. I think turn-based is a little more out of favor, especially than it was some time ago. It's not gone, and that you made a great you made a great point with the game of the year, Baldur's Gate 3, being a turn-based game, so it can't be that bad. But, like, if the original game was turn-based, keep it turn-based. Just keep it the same and remake it the best you can. If they came out with, the same thing would happen if they remade Bloodborne and made it turn-based.
Right.
What, like, I would be furious, because I would be in a world where I didn't see a bunch of hype about it, like, or watch any of the videos. I'd pre-order it the day they announced it, and then I'd load in, and it would be like, your turn. Do you want to press A to attack, press B to heal, press C to dodge? I'd be like, what the fuck?
Uh-huh. I'd be like, oh, well, actually, like, really precise movement in action games and whatnot, that's not in vogue right now, so it's a turn-based RPG.
Yeah, yeah.
What the fuck?
Like, these things are probably cyclic. I would argue that, I bet a fair bit of, like, the turn-based was a limitation of,
like, yeah, and that, like, a big part of it is.
But it's totally reasonable to think that, hey, in the next 10, 15 years, because, like, trends just oscillate. Maybe turn-based gets super popular, and companies work on refining turn-based, and it becomes a really popular genre. And they decide to remake Dark Souls 3 in that era. Like, I don't care how many turn-based games are out right now. Don't make Dark Souls 3 turn-based.
Right.
and like agree with you. I don't care how many games right now are like action RPGs or action-y like real-time fighting. Don't make Final Fantasy then Final Fantasy VII real-time fighting.
Well, the funny thing is they did that, and to be fair, part of it was you could lay some of the blame at the feet of the remake of Final Fantasy VII, but that's what Final Fantasy XVI was, and it fucking flopped. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody loves that game. It's almost universally, it may have decent ratings on like from critics and whatnot. As far as the community goes, mm-hmm. like the Final Fantasy community, Final Fantasy 16 is a joke.
That's funny. I've really taken to, if I'm interested in a movie, looking up Rotten Tomatoes,
mm-hmm.
because Rotten Tomatoes will show you reviewers versus audience. Yep. And I like to see the ratios there quite a bit, because the ratios are usually pretty telling. Because I've seen a lot of movies where it's like, professional reviewers give this an 86%, and then crowds give it a 33%.
Yeah, it turns out that professional reviewers get paid by the studios to give good reviews.
Yeah. So it turns out any review when you see raving reviews about a movie, they might be true, they might not. They get bought.
Yeah. Another good example of all of this, like the flip-flop of it, is like the Final Fantasy or the Resident Evil 4 remake, which we talked mm-hmm. about ad nauseum, like when it came out, but like incredibly popular, was nominated for Game of the Year as a remake, didn't win, obviously, but like basically, I mean, it deviated on some stuff, made a couple changes to the tone so it wasn't quite as campy, which the Resident Evil series is known for. It tried to play it a little more straight and a little more serious. The action was changed a little bit, but still kind of kept the same core feeling of the game. A little bit more difficult, which most people were happy with, myself included. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any issues with that. And it was incredibly popular. Like,
yep.
Because it turns out Resident Evil 4, when it came out, was a groundbreaking, incredibly popular, very well-made game. And if you just fucking make it shiny and maybe play a little better, it's still a groundbreaking, like, super yep. popular fucking game. Like, you don't have to just overhaul these. Like, mm-hmm. the funny thing is, I'm going to pivot as well back to turn-based combat. Square Enix cranks out turn-based combat RPGs all the time. They just don't call them Final Fantasies. And they're all successful. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about turn-based combat? What's the most popular franchise in the world, Jake? Hands down, doesn't matter what genre. Pokemon.
Yep.
It is more Pokemon. Pokemon's bigger than Magic as far as sales go. The Pokemon video games are like, it's the biggest franchise. It's turn-based. Like, the argument that you can't sell a turn-based game is just not true. So, like, I get it if you want to experiment and whatnot, but, like, the fact of the matter is, Final Fantasy VII, best-selling Final Fantasy. I think maybe 14 surpassed it because it's just been out so long and active and had so many like expansions and whatnot. But like, mm-hmm. let's just say second best. Cool. Probably could have just went ahead and just remade the game.
Yep. Like, yeah, it is frustrating. Just like, it's like, do you think it's just arrogance thing where like someone looks at a game and that was made 20 years ago and they're like, I could do it better, and everyone's just screaming like, no, just do it the same, but that you can't talk them out of just doing it better?
I think that's part of it, especially when it comes to remakes. So Final Fantasy the series has some tension, because like Final Fantasy 16 being an action oriented game
mm-hmm.
doesn't really break any traditions, because the Final Fantasy series is known for, with every new release, changing the combat up, sometimes radically.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
So, like, it doesn't, like, personally get on my nerves. I don't enjoy it. I didn't even bother playing Final Fantasy 16, although I was really excited when it first launched, because it was set in, like, medieval Europe, and, like, I mm-hmm. really liked the setting and the aesthetic. But I was like, it's basically Final Fantasy with a here's another issue I'll touch on. The combat in Final Fantasy 16 was basically a watered-down Devil May Cry combat. The problem when you've got people who are experienced at making JRPGs and turn-based combat is when you try to pivot wholly to a new genre, you're not going to get good action combat.
No.
So you're not going to have a what could have been great turn-based combat. You're going to replace turn-based, which could have been excellent, with mediocre action.
Yep. Well, it's like that's the we've talked about it 100 times. It's the water level in a game.
Yep. It's exactly like, that problem.
You guys made a great game, and you tried to force a water level into it. And like, hey, shockingly, that one level's dog shit. You guys are good at what you do. Just do what you're good at.
Yeah. Like, turn-based games built Square Enix. And I will say Square Enix, because fucking Enix also made turn-based games. Mm-hmm. Squaresoft made turn-based games. They merged. They made turn-based games. And then, like, somewhere between five and ten years ago, they just decided to stop doing that. And guess what? They're not great successes.
Yeah, they haven't been riding the waves of success.
Like, if Final Fantasy VII wasn't Final... If Final Fantasy VII Remake wasn't Final Fantasy VII and was something else, it'd probably be like a 6 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but it's got a mediocre game wrapped in the very high-quality skin of Final Fantasy VII. So... But all that being said, like I said, I fully plan on buying Final Fantasy VII Rebirth in the hopes that, like, maybe they kind of, like, saw some of the negative feedback. Like, it wouldn't bother me at all if they just completely ignored everything from the remake that they changed and just, like, from Rebirth forward was the exact same game. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, okay, I don't give a fuck about the remake thing. Like, that's just Midgar. I know how that goes. I've done it, like, 50 times. So, like, cool. Let's just go play the game with shiny new graphics and an amazing looking world, and like that, I'm on board with that, and that's my hope.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is, like, the story for Final Fantasy VII is like within the gaming community, like really deeply embedded in like the community. Like everybody knows that like Sephiroth kills Aerith. Like all these big plot points. Like you haven't even played the fucking game. And you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know a lot of what you're talking about.
Exactly. Well, to me, what a lot of it reeks of is if we plant the idea that things might change, then that keeps people in suspense for whether or not Aerys is going to die. And, like, it's the same problem like Game of Thrones had, where they just started killing people off because, like, they want to subvert your expectations.
Yep.
And it's just like... That's a really stupid reason to do things. It's just it was unexpected. Yeah, it's unexpected because it doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. It's dumb.
Yeah.
Well, that's like, and like, to compare something that I think of when you say that. So like, some people love these types of shows, but like shows that have drama for drama's sake, I can't stand. I hate that a show that creates drama just for because we need drama. And like Game of the reason I thought in my head, the reason Game of Thrones kills people is because we need shock and awe, and that's just. Shock and awe with no substance is just dumb. Yeah. And I think drama with no substance is just dumb. And the forced drama in shows is just unbearable to me.
Well, the fucked up thing with Game of Thrones is it got super popular because people died, but every death felt justified. So, like, in the first few seasons, it would be like, within this world, there are consequences to literally everyone's actions.
Yeah.
If you fuck up, like, again, spoilers, but who the fuck cares at this point? I don't know anybody that even cares about Game of Thrones anymore. They ruined the fucking series that bad. Like, Ned Stark, he tries to take the fucking Iron Throne. He's the most popular character. He's the biggest name in the fucking franchise at this point. He's the head of the family of the good guys. And they cut his fucking head off.
Yeah.
Because that's like, what happens.
In the first, like, couple hundred pages.
Yeah. Like, in his death, in the book, that's what kicks off the whole war. In the show, his death, obviously, kicks off the war as well. But that's the end of the first season. Like, it ends with him being beheaded.
Gotcha.
And everybody's like, holy shit. Like, it's on. Because, like, there are consequences in this world. And he got caught up in the, quote, Game of Thrones, and he lost. And Cersei even tells him that. She goes, be careful, because if you play in this game, you either win or you die.
Yeah.
Yep, and he loses, and he dies. And, like, there's several deaths where it's, like, usually early on what Martin was doing would be, like, the trend would be, like, there are certain kind of codes, at least it felt like. If you're dishonorable, that's when you can kind of, like, expect or at least feel like somebody might be in danger. You know what I mean?
Was it's a reap what you sow kind of thing?
Yes, it's very much. Now there are some characters who, like, good men just do die, and mm-hmm. Ned Stark is one of them. He wasn't trying to take the throne for himself, like a. Do you know the details? I don't want to go too deep into this.
It's Game of Thrones. It's I read basically the king's, first book a long time ago.
The king's son wasn't actually his son. His
I know
wife
that. Yeah,
was,
they were and, none of them were
exactly, and that's the whole point. Is Ned found out, and he was trying. Yeah. The king had a bastard son, and he was trying to hold the throne until he could get the king's actual son get him on the throne.
Uh-huh.
Well, Cersei had other plans.
Yep,
and she killed him.
That was the whole thing, was because the dad had black hair and all the children had blonde hair.
Yep, they all had the hair of the Lannisters.
Yep.
But and those the early deaths felt justified, and then eventually, like, they just start killing people off for the shock value, and it's just like, oh, so we went from this show has stakes to anyone could die at any moment except uh-huh. people who, like, have clear plot armor.
Yeah, like, we can't kill Jon Snow. Like, he cannot die.
Right. And that's one, the other side of and that so, is, like, early on, it didn't feel like anybody had plot armor. Like, so anyone could die.
It's funny that you talk about, like anyone, when anyone can die, it's not interesting anymore. I was talking with Sarah the other day about, like, one of the concepts, like, magic has to have rules, right? Because if anything can happen, it's just boring.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every magical system you deal with, if you wrote a story tomorrow and you made a magic system with no rules, it's a terrible story, I promise. Because when anything can happen, then nothing matters. And that's the exact same thing of what you said. We're like, well, if anyone can just die, then nothing really matters.
Yeah. Like, if it's fine if anyone can die as a result of their own consequences.
Yeah.
But, like, just killing off characters because you just want to piss the uh-huh. audience off is stupid and bad writing.
Yep.
But to be fair, no one gives a fuck about Game of Thrones anymore. And I think it was either last year or the year before. I went back, and this is how disappointed I was in Game of Thrones sucking towards the end. I went back and rewatched the entire thing just to confirm that it was in fact dead to me.
That's
and
awesome.
It followed the exact same track as I remember. Where, like, seasons 1 through 3 are fantastic. 4, 5, and 6. By the end of 6, it starts to really turn. 7 and 8 are dog shit. And they're so bad, it ruins the entire fucking show. You watch, like, 6 or 7 seasons of a show, and it's completely pointless.
Yep. It's kind of funny.
The ending's so bad.
It's funny you say that. Like, you have a thing you love, and there's aspects of it you don't like, so you go back and you make sure. I did that with the Dresden Files this time, because I've listened to the Dresden Files, like 2 or 3 times all the way through, except for books 1, 2, and Ghost Story, which I think is, like, 12?
I think it's 13. I think Changes is 12.
Oh, that makes sense. The Ghost one is 13.
I don't know if that was intentional or not, but it does make sense.
But, like, I'd ever listened to 1 and 2 again, because I just didn't think they were that interesting. There were several characters I didn't like their character design, and I didn't like Ghost Story, book 13, because it was really uninteresting for Harry to just be kind of a scrub. So I went back through this time, and I listened to all of them. And books 1 and 2 kind of suck.
They're just not great.
Like, he's still figuring out what he wants the characters to be. He's still figuring out the lore. There's some really key lore changes in world building that I think he was right to make. But, like, there's a couple, like, just writing mistakes and things where you're like, that doesn't make any sense, Jim Butcher. Book 13, though, Ghost Story, is actually really good. I really enjoyed it this time around. Like, without...
I'm really glad you came around on it.
Yeah. Now that I lost the frustration that Harry sucks and it's kind of boring because Harry can't do anything. And I mean, like, I was still frustrated listening to it. So in that book, there's when Harry finds the younger version of him, like the orphan who's gotten picked up by whatever the dude's name is, the petty little sorcerer.
Yep.
Like, I really wanted Harry to just, like, walk through the doors and just blow his world apart. I thought it'd been the coolest thing ever. And he doesn't. It's more important to the story that he teaches the people around him to stand up to this bad guy and do it for him. But other than that, where I just really wanted Harry just to show up or I want Harry to like go find him afterwards and rock his world as a warden. It was great. I loved the story, the world building. I loved the storytelling. I loved all the lore that I heard the first time but didn't appreciate as much. Yeah, I really enjoy Ghost Story. It's back on to being a really good book.
Good. I'm glad to hear. I think it does a couple important things, which you touched on. Obviously, the world building is huge, in my opinion. You really like getting to see things from the other side is super fucking cool. Mm-hmm. So it answers a lot of questions. I think it acts as a very important reset, because like when changes happens, Harry is at his pinnacle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would have been a little jarring for him to go from that directly. Like if we were just to just blink Ghost Story out of existence and just go straight into Cold Days, I think it would have been really jarring. Like,
why?
To me, Ghost Story functions as a transition period where it's like, not only does he gets kind of a power reset, because like it's just been building up peaks, and then he gets reset back to effectively literally almost zero.
Yeah.
And then we get to see him start to grow again, so we get to go through that same experience. But when he comes back in Cold Days, he's not, I wouldn't say he's as strong, and we've talked about this, he's not as strong in Cold Days as he was in Changes, like in totality. Mm-mm. Right?
Yeah.
But he's a lot farther along than he was at the start. So we get to see him go, like his curve goes up, drops down to zero, goes back up again with Cold Days, like where it effectively restarts, and mm-hmm. now he's going to start the same kind of curve, only it's going to be faster and it's going to go a lot higher.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of like getting like a shitty set in Standard after where you're just like, guys, we got to pump the brakes here because we
yeah.
have to put a cap on like what Harry can do, because he literally just wiped out.
I know, it's
tens of thousands of fucking vampires.
Oh, it's
one act.
I still probably once every couple of weeks I'll be walking around and just think about the fact that I run through the same thought process every time. And it's that the Red Court of Vampires took Harry Dresden's daughter, and then 3 days later, all their hearts got ripped out of their chests at the same time. And right. It makes me laugh every time I think about it.
One of the things I was going to... I don't know if I ever mentioned this to you or not, but I thought about it a couple weeks ago, and it's just been kind of rolling around in my head. Harry broke the laws of magic when he did that, and the White Council doesn't seem to care.
When?
When it, like... There's a strong argument to be made that at least some humans probably died as a result of casting that spell.
So everyone like Martin did. Everybody, are half humans protected?
That's the thing, is like, we don't know for sure, but like, they, so here's the thing. Their plan was to kill Harry, which would have killed his family, right?
Yeah.
I had this all worked out, and I've got to try to rework my way through it. But, like, oh, here's what. Does Susan have parents or any relatives?
Presumably, yeah.
They're dead.
No.
That's exactly how that would work. That was the whole point of killing Harry.
That's how it would have worked. So, only because when the Eves took Harry, they told Harry, if you turn into a vampire... you will be changed enough that your bloodline will be, you'll be protected. Your bloodline doesn't matter anymore. They told him, now they could have been lying, don't get me wrong, but if we're assuming that they're telling the truth, because they offered that when the Ick was attacking the house and they like took him away to the woods and they were trying to like figure out what to do. And they were like, if we turn you into a vampire, you'll be safe from the curse. You're fine. And he was like, well, you know, my daughter still dies. So the implication was that by changing you into a vampire, you were different enough.
I don't know if I buy that.
Okay,
that's fine. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not sure buy that.
They could be wrong. They could have been lying. But like that's at least the story trying to explain why Susan's parents and grandparents are not, you know, dead in a fucking motel in a home in Florida.
Yeah.
Because like.
And to be fair, I hadn't remembered that passage,
so I
need to reincorporate that.
It is a total of, you know, like, it's a total
it's
of
two lines of dialogue,
two yeah. lines of dialogue from three super crazy people or two yeah. super crazy people. And so like, it could have been an accident that Jim Butcher wasn't thinking about or whatever. Cause I can't remember now, there was something that came up recently and I was like, that I wish I texted you about when it happened. Because the same thing happened where I was like listening to the story again. I was like, that actually, he, that, something just fucked up there. That doesn't make any sense. He couldn't do that. I can't remember what it is now. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure, though, it was in Ghost Story. I'm pretty sure at some point Harry gets somewhere and he crosses a threshold, like, for sure. No! That's what it was. And so there could be a reason. But so in Ghost Story, when Harry Dresden is, when he's helping Fit get rid of the petty sorcerer guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
They go get Harry out of his sanctuary. Because if a ghost is out of his sanctuary during the day, he dies, right?
Yes.
Well, he spends the whole day running around in that factory, hiding from sunbeams. He makes it a very clear point to say, like, oh, you know, I avoid the sun, you know, being careful to not go near the sunbeams.
Yep.
And it's like, Harry, it isn't the sun that kills you. It's being outside during the, being out of a sanctuary during the day.
Yeah.
Now, the possible explanation, and the book may have tried to say, was that was, because they go get Harry and they put him in Bob's skull.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob tells him, you're not just a ghost. I think you're actually a soul running around. So maybe because Harry isn't an actual ghost, he doesn't need a sanctuary to be hidden. But that's flimsy at best.
Yeah. And there's been a couple times where, like, I think Harry's just walked through somebody's, like, within the first couple books, I don't think that he had fully fleshed out the threshold thing. And he just goes in somebody's house and uses magic.
So I will say,
something like that.
I don't even consider the first, like, two books when we start talking about, like plot holes or world-building errors, I don't even think about the first two books.
Yeah.
Because, like, in the first book, there's a great example where Jim Butcher just wasn't paying attention. When Susan and Harry are hiding from the toad demon in his circle.
Mm-hmm.
Bob throws him the potions.
Oh, yep. Breaks the circle.
If Bob even can. Because here's the thing about... So Bob doesn't have free will, right? The whole point of a circle is if you don't have free will, you can't... Because the toad demon could just throw a chair through it, except he doesn't have free will. It wouldn't count.
Right.
So yeah, like that's... And I'm not mad at Jim Butcher as the first book, but there's a couple instances in the first few books where you're like, that's not at all... Like, he needed an out, and he didn't think about it.
Yeah. Stupid Butcher not being perfect.
Yeah, it's ridiculous that he only made... Out of the 17 books he's made, there are at least 3 or 4 paragraphs that are fucked up.
Right.
I mean, get with the fucking program, bud. Jeez Louise. God, those books are amazing. I'm looking forward to finishing and picking up that book you were talking about where there's an artomancer or whatever they're called.
Artificer.
Artificer in Europe. So it's not Jim Butcher. Is it anything related to Jim Butcher, or is it just that he's writing it in the same world?
I don't even know if he's necessarily writing it in the same world intentionally. It could have just been a throwaway line.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Where it's kind of like a wink and a nod to Butcher and Dresden Files.
But so the line you're talking about, you're saying in the book when it starts, he mentions, because the character is describing the world of magic, that there's even a dude in America that advertises himself in the phone book as a wizard.
Yes.
And like that's...
And he says Chicago.
Okay, so like even Chicago.
He's directly talking about Dresden.
That's Harry Dresden.
Yeah, but whether or not it's an official, like these two things are canon, or he's just kind of like, you know...
Yeah. If Jim Butcher
tossing a shout out to Jim Butcher.
Jim Butcher hasn't sent him a cease and desist yet. Because if I were Jim Butcher, I would understand not wanting anyone to piggyback off of the empire he's written.
Right.
That's a hell of a world he's built. And if you could just get to piggyback off of that, that would be a big step towards your writing career of not having to do a ton of legwork. I mean,
yep.
Approximately 17 books worth of legwork. All right,
time for Lord of the Rings 4. Let's do it.
Yeah. You just open up your book and go, hey, so you know the Lord of the Rings, all that stuff? That's all canon in this. Let's get started.
Well, that's basically what they did with Rings of Power. They're like, hey, you know that really popular series? Or that really popular series of books, or technically speaking, like 1 or 3 books, depending on how you define it?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just steal all that and just shit on it and make our own thing, because
understand,
we know more than Tolkien.
Understand all that exists, and now we get to start that, like, again, just the idea that you get to start your story and skip over the 4,000 pages of world building,
right?
Which I mean like, it, I get it, it's but that's a big leap forward start into your story design.
The funny thing is, if it was done with competence and some like hard lines you don't cross, for example, if another very good author wanted to make stories in the Dresden verse that weren't about Harry, mm-hmm. but like took place in New York or something like that.
That would be awesome.
That'd be cool. Like that wouldn't bother me at all. It would just add to it without like taking it away. So from a consumer point of view, I'm 100% on board with that.
Yeah, no, I was coming from the assumption that Jim Butcher would be upset. I won't be upset if I get more Harry Dresden. Yeah. I would love for Jim Butcher to like have a couple author buddies and just be okay with them writing more Dresden files. And under the assumption they can do the story credit and they can keep it good. Yeah, I would, you know how much I would love it if, like, let's say Jim Butcher doesn't want to, doesn't have time, but like he signs on with a buddy of his and it's just, we start getting all, we backtrack and get all the books that Molly is in from Molly's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
How awesome would that be? Just all the times Molly was in the relevance. Now we get to see the story through her eyes. Oh, it'd be amazing. I'd buy the fuck out of those books.
You know what I would love? The same thing, but from any one of the Knights of the Cross, preferably Michael. Mm. But like, because that would answer a lot of questions. We know how magic works. We haven't seen it from Molly's perspective. But like, hey, what does Michael Carpenter think when he calls on God? What? Yeah. How does he know where to show up?
When he opens up with in nomine Dio, yeah. What's going on? Because right. Magic is happening. I promise.
Well, and it's the funny thing is, if you are a big Dresden nerd, it's not even necessarily magic in the same way. So like we're working through death masks again, and like Bob specifically says, he's like, I can't go near the Shroud of Turin. It's a different wavelength. Like it's not the same thing as me.
Yeah, but it was. But like,
faith and magic are totally different things.
Yes, I guess I should say magic in the essence of like the like things are happening we can't explain.
Yeah,
but yeah, like it's not. It isn't like when Harry Dresden channels magic and focuses his will. But I would very much love to have a canon explanation for what is happening.
Yep, we also might at some point see a soul gaze of Harry from someone else's perspective.
Oh my god, I would love that so much. I would love Jim Butcher to put ink to paper and tell me what's going on in Harry Dresden's soul that makes everyone freak the fuck out.
Right.
That'd be so cool.
All right, Jake, we're an hour in.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Matt.
Do you have anything to say about yourself?
how's your day going, Matt? How you doing today? Is that what I ask you?
But we should definitely chat. Before we do anything else, we should chat out our Patreon.
Oh, shoot, yeah. If you got me. Here, you just stay quiet, and I'll edit all this out, and then no one will know. I'll tell you what, it's been a long time since I've had you send me the list. Okay, so we do every week give a shout out to our patrons. Thank you guys so much for joining on, helping support the podcast in a very real way. Patrons like Asphalt, Emperor, Ramblin' Rogue, Ashley, Eric, Mono Wolf, Ethan, CJ, Ted, Mumbledown, Rob M, Limit of Questions, Derek T, His Forest, and Jasper. Thank you guys so much. It means an insane amount that you guys, you know, still support us and put forward your time and your money to help us make the show better. As for me, not much to say. I've actually been really sick for the last week and a half. So Sarah got sick, and it was funny. So you got sick a couple weeks ago or a month or two ago, and I remember what happened. You had told me that your wife had gotten sick and that you mm-hmm. were taking all the steps to not get sick. You were sleeping in a different bed because you guys have a guest room. You weren't like not going near each other.
Yeah,
but you weren't
quarantined. But
no hugging, no kissing. Within reason, you're doing everything you could to not get sick. And you got sick anyway. So when Sarah got sick and she was like, oh, I don't want to get you sick, blah, 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 I told her all that. And I was like, don't worry about it. It's going to happen. There is nothing
no
we can do. There is nothing. If Matt and his wife doing, because I promise I'm not doing that. I'm not sleeping on the couch. I'm going to give you a kiss goodbye in the morning. Like, it's going to happen. So don't worry about it. So I got sick. You know, she was sick for a day or two, really bad, and then got better. I was sick. I felt like shit for a day and a half. And then I had been hacking my lungs up for over a week. My throat doesn't necessarily hurt, not like scratchy, but I've been hacking for over a week. And then I a day or two ago had another day where I felt like utter garbage. And then when Sarah woke up today, she felt like garbage. So she got me sick, and then I was sick long enough to get sick again that got her sick again.
Yep. That's basically what happened to Amanda and I. So, like, she got sick. I tried to stay away from her. I got sick anyways.
Uh-huh.
A couple weeks later, she's sick again. And this time I just said, fuck it.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm like, whatever. Because if that's the first time we've ever tried to really stay apart if one of us got sick.
100%.
And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Because I told her, I'm like, look, I will take care of you. But just so you know, every single time you get sick, because she gets, typically speaking, she teaches. So, like, she's around fucking kids all day.
Yeah.
She's the one who gets sick.
Yep.
And then she gives it to me. And I'm like, we can do this, but I'm going to get sick. And then you're going to have to fucking take care of me. Or we can try to, for once, try to, like, be responsible, separate, try to keep apart from each other a little bit. And we still got sick. So I was like, fuck it.
Yep.
We're going right back. I'm like, if it doesn't work, I'm not going to fucking bother with it.
You said what I said, where it's like, if all that effort isn't good enough, then there's no point.
Yeah. Because it's not like I'm going to lock her in her fucking room.
Uh-huh.
Like, we have to live life, and we live together. But I mean, it was to the point where, like, she would be upstairs and I would be downstairs for pretty much the whole day where we would be home. And then I'd sleep in the guest room and she slept in our bedroom, like, for a week.
Yep.
And then it wasn't good enough and I still got sick. So I'm like, fuck that. Like, I'm not just going to fucking waste a week with my wife to not get sick.
I might as well just enjoy the time I have with my wife, give her a kiss, love her, and acknowledge I'm getting sick. Yep.
Yep. So.
So then I got sick, and then she got sick. Then I got sick again, and she got sick again. Yeah. It's been a rough. And then, so this last week, so one of the reasons we didn't have a podcast last week, I worked, and I'm not here to like wag my dick around. It was an insane amount, but I worked like 54 hours last week. We had just an insane amount. It was one of those things where over the course of the week, we just had a ton of meetings that were all relatively important, but also, you know, I probably had 6 hours or so of meetings that I attended that week on top of working. And that's what pushed me into, you know, 11-hour days, multiple days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And just, like, we had Valentine's Day that my wife and I celebrated on Tuesday, so I couldn't record. You celebrated on Wednesday, so we couldn't record. And then we tried Thursday and Friday. And I think Thursday and Friday, I had 12-hour days, couldn't. And then Saturday, we could either record or we could play pre-modern. And we chose to play pre-modern because the schedule is to record on Tuesday anyway.
Yep. At that point, it's like, fuck it.
It's diminishing returns.
A couple days. Yeah.
I haven't been doing very much except working. A little bit of Tarkov Arena. I bought Dark Souls 3 or Dark Souls 2 and then returned it because. So I had a list, and I can't remember what it was, but the problems I had with Dark Souls 2 that I really didn't like, one of them was, and this isn't the game's fault, it's just a fact of the game, it's a much slower-paced game than Dark Souls 3, or especially Bloodborne, and as I've come to learn,
even slower than Dark Souls 3?
Yes, much. When I say it's a slow, clunky game, compared to Dark Souls 3, it's a much slower-paced game. As I'm playing Dark Souls 3 now, I would say the rolling probably was 2/3 as fast, maybe 3/4 as fast.
Mm-hmm.
When you drink your potion, you probably drink it at half speed compared to Dark Souls 3. It was, now, which is fine. That was not what ruined the game for me. I didn't like it, but it was definitely a much slower paced game. But like that paired with some of the enemies, like their attacks were still on par with like Dark Souls 3. Very fast, very hard to predict attacks that were just impossible to dodge. Well, not impossible, but for a scrub like me, healing, especially early in the game, is incredibly limited. You start with one heal. You pretty quickly get an Estus shard to get to two heals. But, like, two heals is just so little healing. And for comparison, in Dark Souls 3, you start with three. You spawn in. When you get your Estus flash, you have three heals. And you very quickly find a fourth and a fifth. So that was rough. I had a couple interactions with some enemies there's an enemy I was fighting and he had a shield, and it happened multiple times in the same hour. Well, I only played for 2 hours, but where like he would raise his shield to shield bash me. His shield would be behind his head. I would swing my sword to attack him, and the sword would bounce off his shield, and he would take reduced damage. And then I would get hit.
Yep.
I don't. Because
you wouldn't even stagger him, so he doesn't shield bash you.
Because he won't stagger. Yep. So he takes very little damage. I take a full hit. Another thing I experienced, which was really annoying, and I don't know if it was lag. It wouldn't be my computer. My computer's plenty strong, but I would quite often press the run button, and it would take like half a second to start running. And that happened multiple times with rolling as well, where I'd be moving and I'd go to roll, and she just wouldn't roll for half a second or three quarters of a second, which almost always resulted in me getting hit. I suspect I was just getting caught in some animation that I didn't realize hadn't finished yet, although I would say visually the animations were done, so that was very, very jarring to have that problem. But I will tell you the one thing that, like, when I noticed it was happening, I immediately was like, I don't want to play this anymore. There was a little mini boss I had to fight, and he was a gimmicky boss, which I can't fucking stand gimmicky bosses in these games, where it's like the point of it is not to fight him. It's like this guy, you don't fight him. There's actually what's the mounted crossbow thing that shoots giant arrows called?
A ballista.
A ballista. There's a ballista nearby. You're supposed to get on the ballista and kill him with the ballista. So, like, he's very difficult. It just feels like you're not supposed to fight him yet. But it's a gimmick. You're supposed to go find the thing. So I was kind of chugging through him and learning his combat or whatever. And I noticed that when I died, my health bar would get a little smaller. And not super uncommon in Dark Souls to punish you a little bit to, like, when you die, you have less health. So, like, in Dark Souls 3, the biggest thing you'd notice is when you kill a boss or if you use an ember, you're kindled and you get a good chunk of health extra. And when you die, you lose that health bar. It's gone. In, I think, Dark Souls 1, when you had, like, your normal health and then a half health. So if you had died and you hadn't, like, gotten your souls back or your body back, you only had half your health, which is kind of a pain in the butt. In this one, every time you died, you lost 10% of your health bar up to 50% until you used an item to recover it. And then I learned that these items are limited at all the vendors and are technically farmable on some enemies somewhere. And I remember I didn't look up where. But when I learned that, and I was like, oh, so I can't just go learn a boss. I can't just go, like, work on getting good at a boss and just take my deaths and it's fine. I'm going to constantly be playing this game with incredibly low heals and half my health on average. I was just like, well, I don't want to do this. That's so much of a struggle that I don't want to fight through.
Yeah, that's really dumb.
Like, I disagree with, like, I didn't think the game was bad. I just really disagree with, like, especially that one, but some of those game design choices. And like we talked about, I have little time. And I have too many other options. I'm not going to force myself to play this. Someday. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, just to back you up here, the problem is, like, people, the game designers in general, and to be fair, they have learned this because they don't implement that mechanic anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's much better to reward success than punish defeat.
Yeah.
In that kind of way. 100%. So, like, the Dark Souls 3 way is great, where it's like you beat a boss and you're a fucking badass. And if you can just keep alive, you just get to ride that high indefinitely. Yeah.
You have a noticeable amount of extra health.
Fuck yeah, you do. Like, that was really cool. I loved that feature. Uh-huh. I also like in Bloodborne, where, like, if you take a hit, if you play aggressively, you can recover some of that health.
Yep.
Like, incentivize behavior by rewarding the behavior you want, not punishing the behavior you don't want.
Yeah.
So it's just like, death is already a big enough punishment in Dark Souls. I don't really see the need. Like, you already lose your XP in theory.
Yeah.
It already resets the entire level. There's limited spawn points. So like, for example, if you're fighting a boss, I've talked about this multiple times and you know this, but like, fighting a boss and then dying and having a fucking 5 to 10 minute run back to the boss seems like plenty punishment enough.
Yeah.
You also don't need to fucking take 10% of my health away, which just makes it harder to fight that fucking boss.
Oh, yeah. Way harder.
Like, as soon as you fail once, like, you're now on a vicious circle of you're now less likely to succeed than you were the first time you tried, instead of being more likely to succeed
yeah
the second, like, and third time.
I'm learning his moveset and getting better, but the number of attacks he has that are now one-hit kills is going up steadily.
Right. Like, that's terrible fucking design.
I didn't like it. And I'm not saying the game is bad. Plenty of people like the game. It has actually relatively good reviews. I have too many more options. And, like, the problem with Dark Souls 2 is one of the options I have is Dark Souls 3.
Yeah. Or Bloodborne or Elden Ring. Like,
yeah. And this game is amazing. And, like, Bloodborne is amazing. And Elden Ring is amazing. And it doesn't have any of those pitfalls. Like, the competition it has is just a little too steep. One day, you know, if I get to where I have an easier cush job and I have a little more free time, I could totally see going back and playing Dark Souls 2 and beating it. Not right now. I have so... My gaming time is so precious and so short.
Yeah.
So, like, the reason... So, I want to play Dark Souls 1. I kind of want to play all of them, obviously. I like FromSoft. I watched a playthrough of Dark Souls 1 from a content creator I like. And one of the things that he was... I hadn't really noticed until he pointed it out. Probably in the first third or so of the game, or maybe half, because he was steamrolling through it, so it's probably more like half, you can't fast travel between bonfires. You unlock the ability when you get to Anne Orlando and find an item or talk to someone. She gives you the ability.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is you have to just run around the map all the time. You're constantly just like hoofing it all over the place. And I'm not saying that's never been done well in a game, and it's I get it, it's fine. I don't want to, and especially when I don't know the map. So like watching him, it doesn't really compare when I watch. It was Jacksepticeye, when I watch him do it, and he beats the game in 8 hours in one sitting. But he just runs straight from point A to point B, and he's like, "Oh, I gotta go back over here," and just takes the shortest path there.
Yep.
I have no fucking clue where anything is. I have to learn where all this shit is. I am gonna spend half of my time playing running back through areas that I don't need to be in, trying to find my way back to wherever to do a thing. To like, I can't level my weapon up until I get back to the shrine bonfire where the blacksmith is. I'm going to spend the next 20 minutes trying to find him. And that's not enjoyable gameplay to me. And for that main reason, I kind of wrote off Dark Souls 1 that I'm probably not going to play it for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just kind of weird. I mean, I guess the alternative would be to just blitzkrieg to that point and then go back and do the other stuff. But yeah, like, I'm sure there's things that you can miss and you just can't get. Like, you'd have to look up a guide to be like, what bosses you can skip.
I mean, there's bosses between here and there that I have to go beat.
Yeah,
I'm almost positive that there's several areas that are gatekept by bosses. And I just, like I said, I don't want to. And I want to play Dark Souls 3. I don't want to do that.
Yep.
So I'll just go re-download Dark Souls 3 again and play it again.
You've gotten old, Jake. When we first met, had we had this conversation, you'd been fucking like screaming at the top of your lungs at me that I'm just an old fart.
Arguably, in this specific example, I am comparing an old game to a much older game. But I get what you're saying. Like, I would rather play Dark Souls 3 than, I mean, any new game out right now. The only one that would be comparable would be, I do want to play Helldivers. That game does look like a ton of fucking fun. And like, yeah, just awesome casual gaming fun with your buds. The problem is, I don't really have any time to play with my buds. You and I have very limited time together with my new schedule. We're either, Matt and I are doing one of two things when we have time off together. We're playing pre-modern or recording a podcast. And I don't want to stop recording the podcast because I like making it for everybody and it's fun to make. And I don't want to stop playing pre-modern because I'd rather play pre-modern than Helldivers for the most part.
Yeah.
So I haven't gotten into it. The other reason why I've kind of taken my foot off the pedal, this is a relatively good problem for the game to have, but still a significant problem. I have seen several TikToks recently of people complaining that they are sitting in a queue to play Helldivers because there's no server space available.
Yep, I've seen that as well.
And I very much do not want to buy a game if there is a chance that, like, hey, I can, you know, I can play games for a few hours today, and I have to spend the first 30 minutes of it waiting for a fucking server spot to open. Absolutely not. So
I've experienced that on multiple Blizzard releases. It's really frustrating.
Yeah, and that's, again, I just don't have time for that. So I just have taken a step. The game looks amazing. I would love to play it. It's one of those things, like, I'm in a couple Discords, and I've kind of talked to them. Once I have any number of people that are like, oh yeah, I'm playing, I'll play with you, and our schedules kind of line up, I'll probably buy it. Until then, I have no desire to force my way into it. Because it's still a relatively new game. It's still somewhat buggy. Like, one of the Discords I'm on, I was talking to him about it, and he apparently bought it a week or two ago, and it won't launch. Like, for whatever reason, on his system, it just will not launch. So he refunded it, and he said he's going to try it again when they get some patches out. He's going to give him a month or two and then try it again. But
yeah,
like,
that's fair.
It's just buggy and won't run. It won't launch. It's black screens. They're having obvious server problems where people literally aren't allowed to play the game. It looks like a game. Obviously, it has like online co-op where you can just like matchmake, but I don't want to do that. I want to run through Space Vietnam with like Matt or some other friends, not randos on the internet. So I'll just keep waiting. I'll just keep fighting, you know, the Abyss Watchers and Silver Knights until that happens.
Well, I don't know if we talked about it, but as far as new games go, I also picked up POW World to try that out.
Oh yeah, you were getting into POW World.
It is a fine game. I think its current problem with me is it's competing directly with pre-modern, and like pre-modern kind of has a lot of my attention right now.
Mm-hmm.
So like when I'm sitting at work or if I have free time, like I'm thinking of decks and like what cards I could tweak. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I just texted you the other day, like, hey, I think you should try out Elvish Spirit Guide in Stasis. Cause like, I'm just sitting at my computer, just looking at lists and going, hey, yeah. Like, what can we tweak here or there? Like, I really want to like, I'm really into pre-modern and I'm not a super brewer, but I do enjoy tuning a deck.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to sit there and come up with a fresh 75, but like, I like taking a 75, playing it a bunch and then figuring out what I like and what I would change.
My favorite thing, 100%.
So like, POW World's fun. It's really, it's a fun take on, it's basically like a satisfactory Valheim Pokemon mix.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't gotten to the point where like, I've got a bunch of like pals doing a bunch of things. I think I have like 10 or 12 like working, because you have to level up your base and that determines how many pals you can have at your base. And then eventually you can get a second base. I haven't gotten to the second base. I'm in the tier, like I'm trying to unlock the second base. Gotcha. There's a lot of exploration, and that's probably my biggest roadblock, is I tend to like just hanging around my base a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what you're supposed to do in this game. You're supposed to go out there and like look around, find new stuff, find like a bunch. There's a ton of stuff to do in the game. I told Jake I have not played it enough to recommend it one way or the other. Like currently I have no official position on it, whether or not I think you should get it or anyone should get it. I've enjoyed the time I've spent on it, which is about 8 or 9 hours, but like,
that's not much,
but it's not enough that I go, like, I've played games for like 2 hours and been like, fuck that. Uh-huh. I've played games for 100 hours and been like, yeah, I think I'm kind of done with this, but I enjoyed it. Like, I don't have an official like rating or opinion on POW World other than I've enjoyed the time I've spent on it. I will probably spend more, but my current attention is directed at pre-modern. Mm-hmm. And then within 9 days, Final Fantasy VII is going to come out. So I think realistically, unless Final Fantasy VII just sucks, and then Helldivers also sucks.
Mm-hmm.
POW World is probably a fine game that's going to get backburnered. Like, that's kind of the way, like, I can see it playing out.
Yeah. You'll just pop back into it once in a while, but...
Yeah. Like,
That's what Dark Souls became for me. Like, Dark Souls just sits on the shelf, and it's like, there's a level of boredom that I will hit eventually, and it's like, well, Dark Souls crosses that threshold.
Right. So, I could see it being a lot of fun to play, like, at a LAN party. I think that'd be hilarious, because there's just a bunch of stuff you can do, and like if me, you, and a couple of the guys got together and just had a LAN party and we just played POW World all night, we could probably have a fucking blast with that.
Oh, I'd be down.
I doubt it has the depth of something like Satisfactory or Factorio, where you could like really spend like 2,000 hours playing POW World.
It's funny to me you use that word, because I thought about saying it earlier and I didn't. You were talking, I didn't think it added anything to the conversation, but that was my, as someone who's literally like watched a bunch of TikToks about it and watched a few people play it and watched a little bit of gameplay on YouTube, like, the game just looks like it doesn't have a lot of depth. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying it has to have 1,000 hours of depth. But the reason the game has not, like, particularly drawn me in is I just haven't seen a lot of depth that interested me.
Mm-hmm.
And let me elaborate on that, I guess. To such that I would want to play it alone.
Yeah.
Playing it with you, of course, like, I would... Like, a game needs no depth. I'd play fucking tic-tac-toe with you or any, like, a friend. Like, me and Sarah could have fun playing Pong. It'd be fine. But if I'm going to get Power World, it's so that I can mostly play it by myself. And I don't see enough depth in it that I would want to do that. And that's why I haven't gotten it myself, nor have I been particularly interested in getting it. But, like Matt said, he didn't, you know, recommend it. When I returned Dark Souls, I had him refund it to my Steam account, and I basically have, like, $25-$30 that just goes towards whatever the next game Matt wants to play. Like Matt made a good point. Little bitch he is. He played Ready or Not with me, and I had a lot of fun, but, like, that was my game. And so, like, the next game Matt says buy this game, I'll just buy it. And that's what we'll do.
Yeah.
So,
and
it's just
realistically, it's probably just going to be Helldivers.
Looks like it to me. But, I mean, who knows what comes out next? And you're like, and we're like, oh my gosh, this looks amazing.
Yeah. I need to find out, and I'm sure it wouldn't take long. I could do it right now. I just don't care to. Mm-hmm. Whether or not there's cross-platform play. Because
there is with PlayStation. There is not with Xbox yet.
Okay. That's what I would... Realistically, I'm probably going to get it on my PS5. Because I imagine it will probably run a little better than it will on my computer.
Probably.
Looks like there's a lot of stuff going on.
There is.
And it's not the type of game you want to play at 20 to 30 frames per second.
No. I say double check on Google to make sure. But so I've got onto that side of TikTok a little bit. And what's funny is there's a cool thing. This is going to be our last conversation because we need to wrap this up.
Yep.
But the cool aspect that makes Helldivers really neat is there's like a stagnant universe. Everyone works together to clear planets. So like you can look at a planet and go, hey, you know, this planet has been 63.12893% liberated. And like every mission liberates it a little bit more. But there's a big thing going on where like everyone's really struggling on one of the universes they've gotten to. Like it sounds like humanity has been steamrolling the game until they got here. And they're like, we're getting our ass kicked. We need fucking help. People get online and help us. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of TikToks talking about like all the Helldiver players, you know, falling behind, struggling. And then it'll show like the Xbox players waiting in the wings, ready to take up the sword as soon as the port happens or as soon as the crossplay gets enabled.
Yep.
So it seems pretty clear that Xbox is the only one not invited to the party right now. PlayStation and PS or PC are together, but
yeah, and that's
double
fair.
Check
fuck Xbox.
Well, have you? Gosh, okay. So one more thing: have you heard that like supposedly Xbox is going to be going into more of like a licensing distribution platform and not a game manufacturing platform?
Yeah, I've heard that. To me, it makes sense. Like,
I just think it's funny that all the TikToks I saw about that and all the memes on the internet is like, well, the console wars are over, folks. We have a clear winner.
Yep, PlayStation 1.
PlayStation 1, the console war. We spent, you know, the teens, the 2008, 2005 to 2015, aggressively battling with each other on Xbox versus PC, or PlayStation, and PlayStation 1.
I would like to note that other than the PlayStation, the, I guess, third gen for PlayStation, so there's the PlayStation 3 versus the Xbox 360, I have chosen the PlayStation every time.
Yep.
The only reason I got a 360 is the only reason I bought that generation was to play Resident Evil 5, and an Xbox 360 was the cheapest way you could do it. It was like $200 for a 360 arcade version.
That's hilarious.
Which you couldn't upgrade or anything. It just had like a smaller hard drive that you couldn't upgrade or anything. You just had to play off the discs. So I bought that one, and I bought Resident Evil 5.
So that's funny you say that. So I have owned exactly one Xbox machine, an Xbox One. I bought it to play exactly Destiny 2. I played Destiny 2 a lot, and then I gave it away to someone who, a friend of my dad's, they got robbed before Christmas.
Oh, so you gave them the...
I gave, because they had young kids, and I didn't, he was talking about it, and I was like, I never play with that thing, just take it. And so they got an Xbox for Christmas.
Nice.
I bought it for Very one game. I played it until I was done with it, and then I never touched it again. I've been a PlayStation guy until I got into PC. And
yeah, the
winning team.
I suppose in the strictest sense, I do own an original Xbox, but it's not one that I bought. It's one that we won from the Pepsi giveaway challenge way back in the day.
Nice.
I think I've told that story before. But my group of friends, they were giving away, like Mountain Dew and Pepsi did a big giveaway. They were giving away two or three Xboxes. One of them was a Mountain Dew edition. Like that they made one of. I didn't win that one, but we won one of the others.
Nice.
And so as a group, we all have an Xbox. Strictly speaking, it's not in the strictest sense mine, but it's mine.
Uh-huh.
Because like two of the people are dead and like one's in Seattle and nobody cares about it. And I just ended up with it. But yeah. I've got an Xbox. It just sits along with my other consoles. I think I've got three games for it. There's like a D&D hack and slash style. Like, it was kind of like the Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance games.
Mm-hmm.
There's a like something like that. And I think I have Fable for it and maybe Halo 1 or 2. I don't remember. But fuck Xbox.
Yeah, pretty much.
It doesn't make any sense anyways. Like, you got a fucking PC. Just make games. Like, you, like...
I know.
I know Microsoft doesn't make the components for computers, but, like, you kind of do.
Yeah, they make... Well, like, you know what I mean? So,
they make the software.
They make the most important part of it, and that's the OS, the operating system.
Right.
Like no one that... Okay, well... 90% of people that build computers like me do not want to learn how to run Linux, even though Linux is arguably better in a lot of ways. None of us want to.
Yep.
We run Windows because Windows is easy.
Well, on top of that, if you're running Linux, like, to get games to work, you had to jump through a bunch of hoops a lot of times anyways. It's the same thing you hear from, like, Apple users a lot, where it's like, oh, Apple's can... They can play any game, too. Yeah, if you fucking, like, partition your hard drive and install Windows.
Like, yeah, when you, like... Yeah, when you
that's not saying Apple can run it. That's saying Windows can run it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, it's any. Yeah, they can run any game as long as you are running a virtual OS of Windows on it.
Yeah, then it runs like shit. Like, that was one of Derek's problems, is he wanted to play Final Fantasy XI, which is a fucking 20-year-old game.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally figured out how to get it to work, to quote, work on his Mac.
Mm-hmm.
And it ran at like 20 frames a second.
Jesus Christ.
And
that's
just
hilarious.
Like, my fucking computer runs that at max frames. My computer has good components that are old, but like...
Well, he had a relatively new MacBook.
He had a... You're right. It's just like, you can't play Final Fantasy XI? What the fuck uses that?
Uh-huh. It edited podcast really well, though.
Yeah, so I guarantee you mine can do just as well.
Probably. Dude, I'm...
Like,
I get that, like, so a Mac... Macs are creator machines, and I 100% I understand that. But as someone who makes a podcast, as a great example, just like, and that's mostly what he did. He, as far as I know, he mostly did podcasting on it.
Yep.
It takes fucking, you could do a podcast on your phone. Most of the editing I do for this podcast, you could do, I would say like, you could do it on your fucking phone. You do not need a machine to edit a podcast. Anyone listening, if you want to make a podcast, you do not need anything special to make a fucking podcast.
Nope.
We did it. I promise you can. Like, some investment capital helps a lot to get, like, some good mics and, honestly, some good sound treatment. Don't skimp on your sound treatment. So, some money is really, really helpful. It doesn't take a nice computer, it doesn't take good ideas, and it doesn't take a good work ethic, I promise.
Or good hosts, or good topics.
Nope.
You can literally just sit around and talk for an hour and 32 minutes about nothing.
And I promise, if you do it for long enough, you will find a section of the internet that appreciates listening to it.
There'll be a few hundred guys that are just like, yeah, whatever. It's what I listen to on my way to work on Wednesday morning.
Yep, pretty much. All right, that's our 90 minutes. I'm about ready to wrap this up, Matt. Is there anything else you would like to talk about this week?
No, the only thing I'd say is I think we're going to talk about pre-modern in the Patreon segment. So if you're interested in hearing about pre-modern, that's where I would head.
Yep, so we'll get bumped over that. We'll start doing our 20 to 30 minutes of Patreon exclusive content. But unfortunately for the main episode, that's going to be it for us. So Matt, as long as nothing else that you can think of you'd like to talk about this week, I think we'll see everyone next week.
Yep, have a nice night, guys.
Welcome, step on in to the Cancer Cartel. Chicken match, chatting meta games, we're slinging some spells, casting elves, sipping on blue soup and parting some veils. Glimpse of nature once upon a time, they're telling the tale of the elvish visionaries on the wildwood prairies, where the brainstorms are so fearsome, so scary, so legendary. Queer and ranger scrounge the sylvan libraries, for when the greens and zenith would parry the clouds and turn their swords into plows. Let them rotate the crops, abundant growth in the ground. Nourish the life from the loam until it flourished unbound. Seeds of innocence burnished all the birch lorian mounds. Gaia's cradle exhaled, carpet of flowers unwound. Birds of paradise sang, tropical islands of sound. Allosaurus shepherd danced on dinosaur stomping grounds. Jake and Matt pondered deeply all this magic they found. Through their visions doused in serum, they saw only for how to convey these magic stories aloud to the crowds, the masses. Make the voices heard, share the truth, the magic. Through ancestral visions, they felt compelled to draw every single card with the cantrip cartel. Draw cards with the cantrip cartel. Wrong cards with the cantrip cartel.